Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 98. I'm Dave Bryant from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Tuesday morning is the great Alex Kozora, also of SteelersDepot.com. Alex, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Dave, and I'm no Dave T, but I hope the listeners like me all the same.
I tell you, did you finally make it through that, and did you have to listen to it twice, and did you need a seatbelt?
Yeah, I flew out of my chair. I fell out the window. But no, it's great to have Dave T on. He's the highlight, I think, of the whole Turbo Podcast season, and he was great.
I tell you, I love Dave T. I mean, you the style. You know, someone I think tweeted at me said, "Boy, Dave T would have been perfect back in the early days." The early Mel Kiper, the early TV draft analyst days, Zimmerman, that kind of stuff. And he really would have. If you go back and you talk to Dave T, just sitting down and talk about his history and how he got started, and I know he's done that on several past podcasts about how he used to handwrite scouting reports for Al Davis, back when he was a teenager. It's fascinating stuff. But the funny thing about Dave T is, every year people come out of the woodwork wanting us to get him on, and inevitably he has nailed some stuff in the past, but he's also been way out in some left field on some takes as well too, and nobody ever seems to remember that. They always remember his kind of hits, if you will. You know, last year he talked about Brian Allen. I think was the big highlight of him hitting. I'm sure we could spend 30 minutes going over this, but what were some of the things that were out there? And I know which way you're probably going to go with a few of these things, but what were some of the things out there in left field that really caught you by surprise that came out of Dave T's mouth?
Maybe some commentary on Jesse Bates. I don't think he's nearly as physical as Dave T said. I don't think he's a bad tackler, and he has a 1-2, but he has the thin frame. He's going to go low. He's going to be a drag down guy, not a real kind of impact type tackler. So I had a little disagreement there. I think, as you said in the podcast, Dave, I was surprised he didn't go in on Rashawn Evans. I thought that might be one guy he could kind of, beat up a little bit, but he seemed pretty complimentary of him. Cameron, think what his thoughts on Leighton Vander Esch were. I can't remember exactly what he said. But the Bates comment, I think, kind of struck me as something I would disagree with a little bit.
Oh, he's pro Vander Esch, obviously. I mean, he opened up the podcast saying he's toting him from Boise.
Oh, yeah, he called him God, didn't he? Yeah.
maybe a little strong. Yeah, maybe a little strong there, but I mean, he is, he obviously thinks if Leighton Vander Esch is on the board for the Steelers, and it sounds like he thinks that will happen, that Vander Esch will be the pick. And obviously, people listening to this show, reading the mocks and everything that goes along with it, Vander Esch has been one of those guys that, three or four guys, I think, that easy to circle as possibly being the pick. We'll talk a little bit more about Vander Esch, I think, later in this show with some things, that came out or reportedly came out about him. We'll obviously discuss that. But let's start with talking a little bit about James Harrison and him announcing on his Instagram account on Monday that's it for him. He's retiring. Obviously, this is the second time he's retired, but it sounds like, and it's not surprising, that this will be his final time, and that obviously is his game against his loss as a member of the New England Patriots to the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl will be his last game. You weren't surprised that James Harrison is finally calling it quits, right?
No, not at all. And I think you had this circled for a while now. I still thought there was a chance he was, could at least come back and play one more season. You know, as he posted that Instagram post, you know, it's all family driven. He's talked about for years now the biggest reason why he would do retirement is to spend time with his family. He's missed so much time with his boys, the way that he trains so, you know, rigorously, you know, out in Arizona and Scottsdale at Danny Center, and obviously the work he puts in, you know, during the year that, you know, you are robbed of so much time with your family. So that's completely understandable. But it was funny, though, right after he had the retirement post, he had weight room posts. So same old James, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's still some up this morning as well, too. So I think some habits are hard to break. I mean, it's gonna be hard for him, I think, to get away from the game, because I mean that it's such a routine. You know, obviously you would think he's still gonna work out, but I mean, James is usually kind of an all or nothing guy, you know. Mm-hmm. So if he goes in there, I mean, it'd be hard for him to transition, I think, into, you know, his life's work, whatever that will be, from this point forward. But I'm not surprised at all with him. I don't think the way he handled things last year was the right way to handle things with the Steelers, to essentially force his way out of Pittsburgh. But, you know, the guy has a problem being second fiddle and didn't think that he deserved to be second fiddle. He obviously got out of Pittsburgh, quickly signed with New England, and you know, was a loss short of having another Super Bowl title. But with all that said, I think Steeler fans have been a little bit too hard on him. I think at some point down the road, there will be some sort of reconciliation. I don't know if he'll have another, you know, media room retirement press conference, you know, like he did, 2014 or whenever it was. But yeah, I would expect some reconciliation to happen at some point. And as Art Rooney said, you know, back in February, after the dust settles. So it's going to take some time for that to happen. But, you know, all this negative talk from fans, I understand. I mean, he went to the dreaded Patriots and this, that, and the other. But I think a little bit of that is overblown, and you know, just have to understand that this is a business, and two sides really didn't agree with what was happening with him last year.
Yeah, absolutely, and I hope it doesn't turn into a Bradshaw or a Troy situation where you have that bad blood that lasts for years and years, and you never really come back with the team. I don't know if it'll be a big grand moment with like a big media session with Harrison coming back. It might be smaller things where you just see him more and more and coming back to Steelers events and in the community and things like that. But I wrote about that this morning, Dave, on Steelers Depot, that I don't believe that James Harrison should be the villain and the enemy of Steelers Nation really any longer, but certainly not, you know, too much farther down the road. I choose to look at his whole career and the impact player that he was and all the great memories he brought Steeler fans, including help, you know, to bring a Super Bowl against the Cardinals back to Pittsburgh. And instead of just the 1 year where everything went wrong and there's blame on both sides, and yes, Harrison made mistakes, but I'm going to look at the bigger picture of his career and what he meant to the Steelers rather than just how sour it ended.
That attitude and his demeanor and the things that endeared him to Steelers fans over the years is ultimately, I think, what led to what happened all last year. You know, it's just he's not a second fiddle type of guy, you know.
Right.
And you know, he thought he could still play. He wanted to play. He knew, you know, he knew that, you know, time is running out for him to get one last Super Bowl run. And it doesn't make it right. I think he could have went about it better. And do I think the Steelers probably should have found a way to get him on the field a little bit more? Yeah, but you know, it would have come probably more at the expense of Bud Dupree than it would of T.J. Watt. And we'll see what happens here in the next few weeks with Bud Dupree. I mean, here we are almost a week away from the draft, and we still don't know if the Steelers are going to pick up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree. And in the past, we've known by now that if, whether or not they're going to pick up a fifth-year option, albeit a short history of that, you know, dating back to Cameron Hayward being the first. But, you know, if they ultimately don't pick up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree, and I think there's a decent chance of that happening, then you have to really wonder to yourself, well, why the hell didn't they play James Harrison more, you know, middle of the season on last year? But immediately after him announcing his retirement, the talk about James Harrison, you know, has predictably shifted to his legacy. So we've already talked about that. You and Matthew Marksy, I think, kind of both written about that this morning. No reason to beat the horse any further about that. But I think quickly the talk is starting to transition about, is James Harrison a Hall of Famer? And my initial reaction, Alex, says no, he's not.
What do you base that on?
Stats mostly. I mean, I think there are 51 guys in the NFL that have more career sacks than James Harrison does. Now, James Harrison obviously was asked to drop, you know, whatever number, 25% of the time during his career. Right? You know, I don't know that's the number, but I mean, it probably wouldn't be too terribly far off if it was. He was good against the run, but you know, to date, still the NFL only has tackles as an official stat, not run stops. Okay, so it's kind of hard unless you follow James Harrison's career year in and year out to paint a picture to Hall of Fame voters of what a great run stopper James Harrison was. It's easy to see the sacks. It's easy to show the highlight of the 100-yard interception return against the Arizona Cardinals, which no doubt will be forever, you know, as long as I'm alive, I'm sure, a top 10 all-time, you know, Steelers play in the history of the franchise. But with that said, I mean, James Harrison was great for a few years there, but the rest of the time, I think Harrison was very good. And last time I looked, there is no Hall of the Very Good.
No, I totally understand the viewpoint, and I am certainly not certain that he's going to get in, but he has my vote, Dave, because he was one of, if not the most dominant pass rusher for, you know, not just 1 year, it was not 10 years, but there was an extended period of time from, what was it, 2007, 2008, you know, to 2011 or whatever exactly the timeline was. And for me, that's good enough. And you're right, the lack of overall sack numbers are definitely going to hurt him. You look at someone like Kevin Green, who's, what, third or fourth all-time on the sack list with 151, whatever the number is, and it took him so long to finally be able to get in. So certainly that's going to work against James Harrison, as other sack numbers are going to continue to rise in the NFL with the way the passing game's going. But I think that the voters are going to remember him because of the Super Bowl play. He's got an iconic moment. He's got an iconic kind of personality and something that's stuck out about him in a good way that's going to make him someone that you can remember, and that he has that air of being one of the most dominant and feared pass rushers. To me, that's good enough. So, you know, I'm not a homer. I think Hines Ward does not deserve to get in the Hall of Fame, will not get in the Hall of Fame. I've been honest about other Steelers in the past, but if I was voting, I think Harrison's worthy of it.
Joey Porter has 98 career sacks.
I know, but was he that dominant guy like Harrison for an extended period of time? I don't think he got to that level.
Well, 2000, 10 and a half sacks. 2001, 9 sacks. 2002, 9 sacks. 2003, 5 sacks. 2004, 7 sacks. And then 2005, 10 and a half sacks. So, I mean, over a period of how many years is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, he had, I don't know, what is that? 21, 30, 39, 30. What's 39 and 12?
51.
Over six, what did I say, 6 seasons there?
Yeah.
Did James Harrison ever put up those kind of numbers over 6 seasons?
It was close, you know, because he had a couple of the higher seasons, you know, Porter at the 17 with Miami. But, you know, if you're going to play the numbers game with Harrison, then, you know, I can't win, because if you look at just numbers alone in the totality of his career, he got off to such a late start with it, you know, 4 sacks when he was 29 years old. he's not going to get in that way. But I think if you, for me, it's more of a gut thing. And I think generally the voters, it's kind of a gut thing. Does this guy get in or not? That's kind of how they vote. And you know, was Porter feared the way Harrison was? I mean, he was a great pass rusher, but was he just this dominant guy that tackles absolutely dreaded to go against? I say no, and that's what changes for me, and that's why I say the numbers may not be spectacular, but the presence and how dominant he was over that three-year span, I don't think Porter really ever had, and a lot of guys don't, and Harrison did.
Now, Harrison did have probably a more consecutive kind of run, if you will, and like you said, 2007. Take your shoes off and add this up. 2007, 8.5. 2008, 16. 2009, 10. 2010, 10.5. And 2011, 9. That's 5 seasons. And then add 6 in 2012.
All right. Well, I'm losing my math here. But was that 43, 50, 56? I'm doing it in my head, roughly.
Okay. So, you know, right there around with Porter. Right,
yeah. And he was defensive player of the year. Was Porter never was, right?
Right, that would be correct.
Right, he doesn't have the Super Bowl play because you know some of these guys get voted in because of that big moment, and he didn't have the weight room stuff. And I get that maybe that doesn't count, but I'm just saying in the minds of a voter, you think about the legacy. You know, what is Porter's legacy? What is Harrison's legacy? I think Harrison has a bigger legacy nationally than Porter did.
Do you think some of that negative stuff, though? I mean, we're look at one point. I mean, he was the poster child for fines, you know, unfairly, I think, in a lot of those instances with Harrison. But, you know, I just think that look, I you know, James Harrison will always be in my memory as a great Steelers pass rusher. You know, but so will Joey Porter in my eyes. I'm not convinced that, you know, I'm not convinced that it's enough to get him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely – I think it's going to take a little while. It's not going to be first ballot. It's unlikely to be second ballot. I think he's going to have to wait a little bit. And I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, but I'm just saying he has my vote. And I think you have to – again, I just think you have to look beyond the numbers, because if you look at the numbers, then you say that, you know, Jason Gildon and James Harrison had similar careers, and nothing could be farther from the truth. I just think if you look beyond the box score, you see a dominant player – and for my criteria, it's just where you dominate over, you know, a fairly extended period of time, as in more than 1 or 2 years. And Harrison was, and was one of the best at what he did in his era.
Is Terrell Suggs a Hall of Famer, Alex?
Oh, I'm probably too biased to answer that, and I'd have to think about his career and a little more. I think he's in a similar boat as Harrison. I don't know if he reached that same level of dominance quite. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm sure Ravens fans would disagree. My guess is no, but you know, I'm probably too biased to answer that.
What about Dwight Freeney?
Oh, that's slam dunk, yes. I think he has to get in.
You know, Dwight Freeney and Terrell Suggs both have 125.5 career sacks. I mean, and that's quite a bit more than James Harrison has. You know,
yeah. If you're playing the numbers game, Harrison's going to lose every time. But Harrison didn't start his career until late, and maybe you can hold that against him, maybe you can't. But he started at 29, basically, and these other guys didn't.
Yeah, just interesting when you look at some of these names. Let me ask you, Freeney and Suggs deserve to go in before Harrison?
I think Freeney does. I would have Harrison over Suggs. So I guess the answer to that would be no, but yeah, I think Freeney does and will get in before Debo does.
But you do admit there is a little bit of bias against the Ravens.
Oh, I'm sure. and you can make a good case for it. Again, I had to think about it more. I mean, you know, I didn't realize that Suggs had that many sacks, so maybe he does, but yeah, I'm also probably too biased.
You know, DeMarcus Ware has 138.5. Look at Julius. I mean, is Julius Peppers a Hall of Famer?
I'd say yes, and Ware too.
And Jason Taylor just got in, right? And he has 139 and a half sacks, and Julius Peppers has 154.5 sacks, and you have a guy like John Abraham, 130. You know, it's just amazing. I invite all of the listeners to go look at, you know, the career sack leader list and all like that. So we'll see. Obviously, it's going to be, you know, if Harrison does ultimately get in, I mean, we might be talking 8, 9, 10 years from now, right?
Like a Kevin Green type weight, because it took him, what, 8? Didn't take Kevin Green 7, 8 years
it to get took Kevin time? Green a long time, I think. Yeah. His career ended in 99, right? Kevin
Was
Green?
It? So, yeah, it took him 13, that'd be 13, 5 years after.
So, I mean,
The math is.
Yeah, took quite a few years with him.
Last thing on Harrison, what do you think he's going to do post NFL career? Is he going to? What do you think his life is going to be like? His life's work.
It's going to be hard for him, I think, to get out of the pot. I think he likes that. I think he likes the Instagram attention, the world's strongest man kind of stuff. I don't think it's going to be coaching or anything like that. You know, I don't think it's going to be anything closely related to the NFL. That's a good question. I don't think he's gonna have an outdoorsman show made for TV. You know,
I'd watch the heck out of that. Though.
You know, anything along those lines. I mean, that's a great question. I don't know. He's a guy that I don't think wants to be around the media, anymore. So I don't know, but I think it's gonna be hard for him. And it probably already is hard for him to transition into life outside of the NFL. I think it's going to be hard for him to stop lifting and doing some of those things. Deep down inside, Alex, I think he thinks he still can play.
Oh, I know he can stop. I'm sure he believes that. I think he just wants to. I think he just wants to spend time with family and hates the time that he's missed. I think he's going to go kind of a Lambert route and maybe not become a sheriff, but just kind of be that recluse and kind of fade away from the spotlight and, you know, be with his family and spend some quality time there. And that might happen for 5 years or so, and then he'll figure something out. But, I don't think it's not going to be coaching. I don't think James Harrison's going to be a good coach. Definitely nothing with the media. I don't think you're going to hear from James Harrison too much outside of some Instagram, you know, weight room typical stuff. But I don't think he's going to make too much of a splash next couple of years.
You know, I think he'll still make the public, I mean, appearances. You know, he just showed up at the Shear the Beard thing that Brett Kiesel did,
you know.
You know, I think there's still going to be, you know, I don't think he's going to be as reclusive as Lambert, you know, along those lines.
That's fair.
But I think he will have somewhat of a problem transitioning back into whatever, you know, he wants to do from this point forward. So, all right, enough about James Harrison, but I thought it was worthy of, you know, of having that long discussion about him now that it looks like you know, this is finally it for him. Which way do we want to go now? One of the highlights, what I like to look at, Alex, when it comes to rankings ahead of the draft, and let me go this way first. I'm trying to finish up some of my pre-draft work by presenting some of these sack compilation videos of a few of these players, and I think the most recent ones I've done have been in Wasu out of USC and Sam Hubbard out of Ohio State. I knew some about both of those players. I hadn't gotten extensively into their film until this past week, and I think several times we have talked about in Wasu, you know, especially dating back to, I think, the Senior Bowl, saying, is he an edge guy? Is he an inside guy? Having the same conversation about double O over there at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And you know, since then, you and I have talked about him saying, well, that guy's definitely an edge guy. Mm-hmm. After watching Nwosu, Alex, I think he's an edge guy as well, too. But his athleticism and the way they used him in some instances at Ohio State off the ball in the middle, you know, there's that element of maybe of a Lawrence Timmons factor, mm-hmm. I guess, with him that, look, you could draft this guy. You could probably initially work him on the edge, but maybe, you know, maybe maybe he would be a decent 3-4 inside linebacker as well. I was impressed by his tape. Now, obviously, when you look at his measurables and the things that go along with that, and the stuff that you look at his overall career at USC. You know, you can understand why there's a few questions about this guy, but overall, there's not a lot not to like about Nwosu.
You know, Dave, you hit the nail on the head with the Timmons comparison, because that's where my mind has gone immediately and throughout this process, and I kind of like the more and more to Pittsburgh, because I don't necessarily see him as a true edge guy, and I don't think he sees that in himself. Again, I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, and he said he saw himself as kind of, what he said, I think a Sam linebacker, an off-ball guy, you know, 4-3 type. But I think he's a guy that has the versatility that he can play some snaps on the edge, some third down stuff, which the Steelers do a ton with their inside linebackers. And then he could shift inside and play that kind of 3-4 Mac linebacker role. And so I think that'd be a great fit. I hope he's on their radar. I haven't heard much interest in him, but I think that's a fantastic second round pick. I think he's an advanced pass rusher. He got good coaching. You know, his coach, DN coach at USC, I forget the name, I can't pronounce it, but it was the Vikings DN that I think got cancer and had to retire, but he had a really successful career before he had to retire. So he's had good coaching. Obviously, you know, the Lynn Swann connection with the AD, so you might be able to find some more info out about him. But I think he fits the Steelers scheme really well, a high-character guy, a good pass rusher, a good player overall. As you said, not a lot of flaws in his game. May not be that elite top-end player ever, but I think a really steady guy that's going to, you know, be flexible to do anything, you know, Steelers are going to ask him to do, and I think it'd be a fantastic second-round pick.
Yeah, you know, you go back, and he was a two-year starter at USC in 2016, 2017, really turned it on last year, 11.5 tackles for loss, 9.5 sacks. His 12.5 career sacks at USC all came during those final 2 years. Now, there was that incident, I think, when he was a freshman getting sent home from the bowl game that really woke him up. There, and he went on to become a captain for them. He's a fun guy. If you go back and listen to his combine press conference, he is a guy. And you know, here's the thing about it, and I'm assuming his age is listed right by Dane Brugler, and I found this listed somewhere else. There's nothing to lead me to believe that this is not right, but 21, he's just over 21 years of age, and he will not turn 22 until right at the end of December. So he checks a lot of boxes, I think, when it comes to the Steelers. Now, at 6'2", 251 pounds, did he fit in that did you include him in your outside linebacker or inside linebacker study when it comes to players of Steelers draft?
I had him in both because you could consider him for either. He fit, I think. I'm going to pull it up, though, and double check. But he was close. I'll look here. For the inside guys, he was one away. He did not fit for the short shuttle because he did not participate in at the combine.
Okay.
For the outside,
now if he, I have his pro day short shuttle time of 4.27. Would that have got him in there?
Yes. Yeah. If I count the pro day times, I typically don't. I don't. But yes, it would have counted.
Okay. So he would have been in. And what group was that?
The inside linebackers.
Okay. Now, what about the outside linebackers?
I don't have what he missed or anything. I can look it up, but I don't have him included for either the guys that hit every box or missed by one. So he missed a little bit more with the outside guys.
Okay. So he missed a little bit more as an outside guy. You think mainly because of height? You think height was one of
those? No, the height requirement 6'1", so he made it there. It's probably some stuff he didn't participate in. That's a big problem with some of these guys. They just don't participate in some of these events. But I can look at – let me pull his stuff up here, see if I can figure out what he missed. He missed in the vert. He did a 32 vert. The benchmark's 33. I'd have to look at what else he missed. He might have missed some of the length stuff, but a little bit more. He missed a little more outside than he did inside.
Okay, all right.
And there's no three-cone time on him because he didn't work out there.
7.05.
Yeah, that wouldn't have made it in my study.
Okay. But I tell you, you look at his tape, there is a little bit of bend there, you know? Now he is, you know, what is he? Is he a third round guy in your mind?
I'd be really happy to get him in third. I was thinking more second round, pick 60, because I don't know if you're going to get him back the other way. So if I was going to take him, you know, if they don't go inside linebacker in the first, they're going to have some good options, I think. I know Colbert's comments about the class, and we'll find out how true that is. But if they don't go inside in the first, I think you're looking at Malik Jefferson. I'd love to see Nwosu go, or at least be on the radar at pick 60. And then real quick, the guy earlier I mentioned, his pass rush coach was Kenichi Udizi, from the Vikings, first-round pick in 2004, who had his career cut short, but he went back to school. So he's gotten some good coaching, as you'd expect, as well.
When you look at his spark score, talking about Nwosu,
I imagine it's not great.
122.3.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, not when it comes to the edge guys who did enough to qualify on the list. I mean, it's top 20. Mm-hmm. You know, so okay. Believe it or not, it's right there, a few spots below Sam Hubbard. Sam Hubbard registered a 124.7. Here's the thing, and a perfect time to transition into Sam Hubbard's tape. I was more impressed with Nwosu's sacks than I was with Sam Hubbard's. Okay, mm-hmm. Sam Hubbard. Now, this shouldn't be a demerit for Hubbard, because I can remember going back and looking at all of T.J. Watt's sacks at Wisconsin, and there were a lot of twists and stunts and those kind of things when it came to Watt's, you know, college career sack numbers. And you get the same feel when you look at Hubbard's tape when it comes to sacks. You know, do we see a lot of him, you know, using, you know, beating his guy with bull or around the edge or rip or anything like that? And the answer is no, but he does find a way to get to the quarterback. So, a lot of them are twist inside. A lot of them, you know, probably wouldn't be what we would classify as high quality sacks, but on the same notion, we're not talking about Jarvis Jones college sacks either.
Right, yeah, and that's just going to be a reality with some of these NFL-type college defenses, whether that's Wisconsin, Iowa State, you know, Bama, or Georgia. You know, they're going to run some of that stuff, and a lot of college offense aren't equipped to defend it, and you're going to create some sacks that way. I know the 40 time looks bad for Hubbard. Everyone's going to point to Jarvis Jones. I don't see this guy as a Jarvis Jones. This guy can bend the edge. That was Jones' biggest problem. You know, Jarvis' biggest problem was not that he was slow. The 40 time, you never even thought of it when you watched him on tape. He just couldn't bend. There was no pass rush move and no pass rush plan, and a lack of strength, I thought, hurt him as well. I think Hubbard has all that ability, and you look at his three-cone time. That was the number that should have been the most alarming for Jarvis Jones, was that three cone, because it was whatever it was, 7.4 or whatever the number was. Sam Hubbard's was 6.84 at the combine, one of the best numbers there, especially for how big he is at 270 pounds. He weighed in, he'll lose some of that weight if he comes to Pittsburgh. And this guy can bend the edge, he can win with power. You know, he's played in an NFL defense, he's checking those boxes we've talked about. Obviously, an Ohio State guy, so that's an obvious connection there. Why not Sam Hubbard in the first round?
In the first, wow. I can't put him there. I see him second to third round guy with him. Now, I like the way – I like his play against the run more than I like Nwosu's.
Okay.
I think Hubbard is closer to his ceiling, a lot more closer to his ceiling than Nwosu is.
I'd have to think about that somewhere. I think I disagree, though. I think that Hubbard has a higher ceiling.
Now, Hubbard obviously has the more length and you know, that kind of stuff. 6'5". Hubbard's going to be attractive to odd and even front teams, right?
Yeah, I think most people view him as a 4-3 guy, but I think he has the ability to drop. You know, if they can do conversion projects like Anthony Ciccolo, who was a 5-tech, you know, at Miami, they can do it with Hubbard. I mean, they've done the big guy stuff before.
So you would have no problem if Hubbard was the first-round guy, right?
I gotta watch some of these guys a little bit more. I was doing some stuff last night, but you know, everything I know about Hubbard so far and what I have seen of him and the numbers he's posted, I'm not worried about the 40 time. I love the three cone time. I'd have no problem with that pick. I watched some more Lorenzo Carter last night from Georgia, who I know really hasn't been talked about in connection with the Steelers in the first round, but he's a name, quote unquote, on the rise. It sounds like he's going to be a first round pick somewhere in the late first round that I think fits what the Steelers look for almost to a T. The production isn't particularly strong, but he's a fantastic athlete that moved all around. He played a little inside, played outside, was split up, you know, split off the ball and dropped into coverage a ton. And is a fantastic athlete and a violent finisher. So, you know, I'm going to maybe push that a little bit harder and say, you know, keep an eye on Lorenzo Carter in the first round.
What are your thoughts about Arden Key?
I watched him. You know, it was such a weird year for him last year. 2016, he was, you know, leaving school as a top five pick, and then his weight got super weird. He left the school, I think, in the summer for some unknown reason. He came back, and his weight, he said, got up to as much as 280, and I think he weighed in the, you know, the 230 range. You know, this tape isn't terrible. There's some weird effort stuff late in games where I think he's either tiring down or something's going on there. I mean, this guy can win the edge. He's got, I think, a pretty advanced hand use. I mean, there's a couple attractive things about him. But if you're Pittsburgh and you have all these character questions and you're not really sure exactly what Arden Key you're getting, they're not going to make that kind of investment on him. Now, I don't think he's a first-rounder anymore. I think he's going to be a second-round pick. So maybe that helps the case a little bit for the risk assessment. But I'm not touching him if I'm Pittsburgh, and I don't think he's going to fit that character aspect.
Now, we've seen them take some chances in the second round in the past, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's changed. Honestly, I think after Martavis Bryant, it really has shifted, and they've preached the hearts and smarts for several years now. And, I mean, I think Bryant, I wrote about this, the last really character problem they've taken in the draft total, first, seventh round, doesn't matter, was really Martavis Bryant. Can you think of any others?
Yeah, I would have to go pick by pick, but I would tend to agree with you there. We're going to be surprised if they don't draft an edge, right?
At all?
At all.
I mean, they should draft one. It's just a question of where it's going to be. You could be the first round. It could be the fifth round. I mean, I'm all for trading back in the second round, getting some extra picks. I think they need it, but you know that's easy to say for me.
I am currently, for those listening, I have compiled all the sacks of Josh Sweat out of Florida State, and I was a little bit surprised. Everybody, you know, seemingly, and I talked to my my buddy, the beat writer, who writes for Seminoles.com, you know, and he didn't see anybody from the Steelers at the pro day there. So, but with that said, I figured a lot of people would like to see what Josh Sweat look. You know, have a look at his. What did he have? Like 20? I think he had 29 career sacks at Florida State, and you know, he is another guy that I think. Odd and even fronts are going to, you know, take a look at because of his length there and all. So I hope to have that up in the next couple of days as well. You know, and we talked about the kid out of Oklahoma as well, but when you look at these guys like Ronokwo out of Oklahoma at 6'1" and 5'8", and you look at guys like in Wasu who just a hair like 6'2" and an eighth, and then you go back and look at guys like Carl Lawson. You know why? You know why the hell did he fall so far down in the draft? You have to think that guys like that are third round or later material.
Well, like I said, I think Wasu could go in the second. I think the versatility is going to be attractive, and I certainly wouldn't have any problems with him. You know, the Oklahoma kid, I think you can justify a late second round pick, but sure, the third round could happen. Who was the other name you mentioned? Is there another name?
I think those were the two. Right there.
Yeah, I think both guys could be late second round picks. But you're right. It's really hard to say. And if you're talking about a second round picks, then it could be a guy that easily goes, you know, mid third round.
And then, you know, I think we get into the neighborhood of you know, I don't know where you view Chad Thomas as being, you know, out of Miami. Now, they, you know, is he a guy that you asked to put on the weight to be a, you know, a 5'4" tech? Or is he a guy that you try to take like Anthony Chiclo? You know, is he agile enough to become an edge, you know?
Yeah, I think he'd probably just stay 5-tech. What's he weighed in? 6'5", 281. I think 5-tech all the way.
Yeah, I think so as well, too. And the Steelers defensive line coach was at that workout. I haven't seen any reports of Joey Porter showing up anywhere at Pro Days this year. Maybe that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, maybe that's been the problem.
And I know you remain high on Marquise Haynes out of Ole Miss. Man, with his age and, you know, he's 24 and a half already.
I didn't know that.
Born in, he will be 25, Alex, in December. Wow. You know, and that with, you know, him needing sand in the pants and his play against the run, it was easy for me to mark him out. But, you know, when you get kind of past that and you're looking for edge rushers, you're like, man, where are the guys that fit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the evaluation is, and you know, Colbert's talked about it, it's so difficult because you have to factor in so much. If you're talking about a 4-3, you know, even front pass rusher, it's a pretty limited scope you have to look at, basically just how good of a pass rusher they are. And if they can be elite there, then you can sacrifice a little troubles in the run game. But with a 3-4 guy, I mean, it's everything. It's versatility. It's comfort playing backwards. Often there's a projection there, you know, based on some of the drills they've done, because a lot of these guys didn't do it too often in college. They're setting the edge. Of course, there's rushing the passer. There's versatility, lining up other places, understanding blitz concepts, because that's going to be used a lot. I mean, it's everything. And you have to have the IQ and the conditioning to handle all that. So it's very difficult, and I think it's getting a little easier because I think a lot of these teams are playing more hybrid defenses and guys are standing up more, and they're not total projections the way that Lamar Woodley was, a guy that never dropped, and you're just having to kind of start from scratch. You know, we've seen Bud Dupree and TJ Watt, be our guys that played on their feet quite a bit and dropped as almost as often as they rush, but it's still difficult to do, and it's certainly going to be an area that the Steelers have to get right because they've gotten it wrong too often in the past.
I haven't taken your temperature in a while on Bud Dupree, so I'll use the oral thermometer.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, as opposed to the other one.
Where are you right now, Bud Dupree, in this fifth-year option?
I believe the Steelers will not pick it up. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that. That's just my belief that they will not. I know we're early in this process. We've only seen a couple names get picked up so far. Brandon Scherf from Washington. One of the other guys did. I forget who it was. But I believe he will not. They will not get picked up. And I don't think Bud Dupree is going to be too happy about that. What comes from that, I'm not sure.
And that's kind of the boat I've been in all along. I will not be surprised if it goes either way. I don't think they will, and I don't think they should.
The second part is where I think I disagree. I want to at least have the ability to take that extra look, and if he does break out, which I think is still possible, I'm certainly not going to bang the drum the way he did last year and say this is a guy that can be a 12-sack guy, because it just hasn't happened yet, and I think injuries have played a factor that people have to understand, but I'm not going to, definition of insanity, say the same thing, do the same thing. What do you expect? But I don't, I think it's regard. It doesn't matter what I think. I think it's just that they're not going to pick it up, and that's going to be that.
I think you have a situation here like similar to like Nick Perry, you know. I don't do it. And then, you know, if he blows up, then I have two options. I can put the transition tag on him, or I can put the franchise tag on him. And the luxury about the transition tag is, yeah, he's open for negotiation with other teams, but you have the right, you know, to match that as well. So, I have to see. Look, I know the easy option is, well, just throw the $9-whatever-million fifth-year option on him, and if it doesn't work out, well, then you just cut him before the start of new league year. But, I mean, if he's – to me, you either think he's worthy, completely worthy of it, and you don't – why go into it, well, but, you know? I go into it with conviction that either he deserves it now or he doesn't deserve it. That's the way I would approach it with him if I were the Steelers. Because, I mean, the last thing I want to do is put that on him. He have kind of a mediocre season, if you will, not really being deserving of it. And then you have to cut him. And then you get zero compensation, you know, compensatory pick. I don't think they will. I wouldn't, but on the flip side, if it comes out an hour from now that says the Steelers have picked up the fifth year option on Bud Dupree, I won't be surprised.
Yeah, I'm basically in the same boat as you. I don't believe that they will. I think that they should. I think you make a compelling case, but I think that there's still, we've seen enough from Dupree, and I honestly think that health has been such a huge, you know, detriment to his ability even last year. I mean, I think he was hurting more than what was led on. But I don't think they will. And, you know, who knows what happens with Dupree. I don't think he's going to be happy about that. I think he probably thinks he deserves it. And, you know, does he not show up or something? You know, who knows?
Okay, I started to get to this a little bit earlier in the show, but I wanted to kind of save it for the back end here along with your most recent mock draft. I always enjoy when the great Gil Brandt releases his hot, I think it's 100 or 150. I don't think it's been consistent. Maybe it has been his hot 150 over the year. I broke this down on the site. I think the last few years about how his hot 150 stacks up with where players are ultimately drafted. And I think, like it or not, I think Gil Brandt is still a highly connected guy in the NFL. Really, really do. And if you go back and look at his hot 100 or 150, I think what I've done is I've taken his 150 and trimmed it down to his 100 and then measured him that way. And I think in doing so, I think he's measured up pretty good over the years of where he ranks these players and where they ultimately go. So with that, he released his top 150, I think, yesterday. Here are some names that are in. Let's start with his top 30. He has Darius Geis in there at number 30. He has where am I here? He has Rashawn Evans at number 28 overall. He has obviously he has Lamar Jackson at 21 overall. Leighton Vander Esch, he has 17 overall. Roquan Smith, 13th overall, and the other, Tremaine Edmonds, the other inside linebacker at 6th overall. So, you know, judging by that, it'll be a push maybe to get a guy, you know, one of those four inside linebackers to fall to the Steelers. So I think with most of the conversation right now, with Leighton Vander Esch, I still think Leighton Vander. I guess it'll be a perfect time to address that. There was the report that came out yesterday from I think Charlie Campbell at Walter Football, saying that medical concerns with Leighton Vander Esch, yada yada, that teams have him off the draft board. There's a reason why we don't, you and I, and don't talk a lot about Walter Football, and link to his site, because quite honestly, I think he's full of crap a lot of times.
Yeah, and this one was, for the most part, debunked. It was interesting just I don't like the false report, but it was interesting to kind of see the medical process, because you don't hear a whole lot about that in the medical grading, and I think I got to learn a little bit about that. But essentially, he had a stinger, essentially, and, you know, a couple other minor injuries, and does not sound like he's been taken off the board by anybody. There's always going to be injuries in a player's career, and you're going to be poked and prodded and have everything looked at. So, you know, there's the smallest grain of truth to that original report, but it's not nearly as ominous as it was made out to be. I don't think it's going to affect his draft stock one bit.
I mean, he played every game last season, you know. He missed the 6 games during the 2016 season, but, I mean,
no recheck.
Yeah, no medical recheck, and as far as I can tell, the same goes for Rashawn Evans, right? Have you heard anything other than Rashawn Evans and a medical recheck or anything along those lines?
No, but to be honest, I haven't heard of really anybody going back for medical rechecks, so I don't know of a list.
Right, and there might not. I mean, there may have been one. Well, look, if it was anybody notable, we're going to learn about it here really, really soon. Leighton Vander Esch, any doubt in your mind that he goes in the first? I mean, do you see him falling?
I think it's really tough for him to go to Pittsburgh. I think there's just too much interest in the mid rounds for him to fall all the way to 28.
I'm with you. I think there's a better chance Evans does, right?
Yeah, I think Evans will be on the board at 20. I can't say that with 100% certainty, but I'm pretty confident saying that.
The thing about Evans, if there was no such thing as a combine or a pro day, I would slam dunk put Evans down there. Because, I mean, he checks a lot of boxes. My problem still, I'm having a problem getting past, you know, wondering. I mean, because, look, if you look at his tape, you're drafting him, right?
Yes.
All right. The thing is, we live in this world now where we get concerned about the numbers and everything that goes along with that, and then the groin injury. I would be lying, and I think I said as much recently. You know, I've been a little bit concerned about this groin injury, and you know, is it going to be a kind of you draft him, and then all of a sudden he has to have a core muscle surgery or things like that? And are you fine with it? And the thing I think you got to think about with Rashawn Evans too is, and that this is how I try to keep myself kind of balanced in this. Who would you rather have at the strong side backer position? Would you rather have Vince Williams or Rashawn Evans, you know, right now?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I'm a big Vince Williams fan, and I'm not wanting to move him. Now, if Evans comes in and plays well and Bostic does his job, then, you know, that might end up being the case. I still go Vince Williams because that's the known, you know, product, and I'm looking to address the Mac position, if that helps.
All right. Now, what are you doing past this year?
Well, I hopefully you can, you know, get Vince Williams back. I know it's not a guarantee, and, you know, maybe then Evans will slide to the Buck linebacker in 2019 if it's Williams goes. I mean, you have the options. I think Evans can play both. You know, the thing with Evans, and the reason I'm not saying I take him over Vander Esch. I mean, I know I mentioned last time maybe Vander Esch. I have a little ahead of Evans. I haven't finalized it, but Evans is a much more physical player. I think if there's one big knock against Vander Esch beyond the service level stuff, you know, the small school, quote unquote, and the lack of experience, is that he's not the most physical player. Even some stuff in blitzing, you know, 1-on-1 with the back. There's a lack of physicality there, which is weird for a guy that's 250 pounds and is, you know, physically gifted as he is. I think Evans is the more physical player, the more violent player. And, you know, it's all about what you value in the Mac position. Maybe you can say your guy doesn't have to be as physical as if he was playing the Buck, but I think that's one compelling reason to say Evans over Vander Esch.
So, in other words, Vander Esch's game against Virginia.
Yeah, right. And that's the other thing. You know, I know they had a great game against Oregon, but, you know, do you draft a guy based off of one game? I mean, you have a whole career. You have every angle you look at, all these other players. Are you going to take that risk and say what he did in this one game, as good as it was, is going to be his whole NFL career?
So you're taking Evans over Vander Esch?
I'm not saying. I will get back to you before the draft. I'm not going to – I don't have a final conclusion yet, but I'm just saying – you know, based on what you value, the Steelers are going to value the physicality more. It's got to be Evans. I mean, I'm not saying they have to, and there's certainly good reasons not to. You know, talk about the Mac position. For me, the first thing is, can you be a three-down linebacker? Can you cover? Can you play in space? I will take that over a little lack of physicality. But if you want to play devil's advocate and you want to point out some of the flaws in Vander Esch's game beyond just the bio, if you want to talk about the tape, that's going to be one issue, and I think that's one problem people have had some reservations on.
Are you overly excited about either player being the Steelers' pick this year?
My gut says I'm more excited about Evans than Vander Esch, but maybe that's just me not watching them closely enough or what. I mean, Evans has played inside, he's played outside, he's a little Timmons-like in that regard. I think he is the more physical player. I think he has good instincts. I'm not as worried about the injury factor, and I just honestly think he's going to be right up there for the pick. I mean, if they go conventional, they don't go with, like, Mason Rudolph or Darius Geis or someone like that, I think Evans has a really good chance to be a Steeler.
And if that happens, you're not going to run outside and do laps around your house, though, right?
No, probably not to that extent, but I'm going to be happy with it. I'm not going to be screaming Jarvis Jones 2.0. I think it's just dumb for 10 different reasons, and I think it's going to be a great pick.
I'm not either. I mean, be quite honest with you, if they go linebacker, inside linebacker, I'm to the point now where I think Vander Esch will be gone, and I think I think Edmonds will be gone. Obviously, Roquan Smith would be gone. I think it's Evans or bust at this point, personally. Right.
If they don't take Evans in the first, when do they take an inside guy? At 60?
Yeah, that's a good question. When does it happen? I mean, obviously you would think it's going to happen, in the first three picks if they stand – where they are right now, but I mean all bets will definitely be off at that point. Here's where I am right now, Alex, is I find myself hard to get excited about anybody that could possibly be that pick right now, and carrying on with the theme about where are you on Isaiah Wynn? I mean, let's face it. I mean, Ramon Foster's not getting any younger. Could you make a argument for a guy like Isaiah Wynn being maybe the second interior lineman or third interior lineman off the board? Is it possible that we're talking about a guy like Wynn?
I don't think it's possible. I think that'd just be the worst mistake. And I like Wynn. He's a good player. He can play tackle. He can play guard. He's got the O-line guys in his camp. I don't doubt that he's going to be a really good player, but I want to win now, Dave. I want to win in 2018. I've talked about how I think this window is closing in 2018. This is the Steelers' last best chance to win a Super Bowl, and drafting a reserve lineman is not going to help you get across that bridge.
Any of these cornerbacks interest you? Dante Jackson or Alexander out of Louisville? I mean, it would blow, I think, both of our minds if the Steelers drafted a cornerback in the first round, right?
It would. I mean, Jair Alexander is a little more interesting. He checked every box in a cornerback study, but I just don't see what you're going to do with the guy year one. I think you have some good corner depth for the first time. If you're going to draft a corner, it might be late, but I assume Brian Allen's going to stay at corner. It very much sounds like Cam Sutton staying at corner. You have Hilton, you have Burns, you have Hayden. That's not the position you have to go after early.
Tight end, I mean, we would be our draws would drop. Our jaws would drop if they drafted a tight end there. Darius Geis, I've come around more to the possibility of a Geis, but even so, I mean, how the hell are you going to get him on the field?
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I've come around to it more just because of the obvious interest they've shown in him, and it's very clear that they like him a lot. And if he falls, let me ask you this, Dave: if he falls to 28, do you think he's going to be the highest player on their board in terms of their grade?
I think it's possible.
I think it's yes.
I think it is possible with him going through. I mean, look, none of these wide receivers. And there's a few of them I like. I mean, I like DJ Chark. I really like his film. I like the kid out of Texas A&M who they brought in for a visit. I really do like him. But do I like him first round? No. I mean, I like James Washington out of Oklahoma State as well. I mean, I think if the Steelers draft a wide receiver, in the first few rounds, I think it could be, Chark, Kirk, or James Washington. I really, really do. Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think they could take one in the second round?
I will not be shocked.
Okay, so if they could take one in the second round, is it really impossible that they could take one in the first? Because they could take an inside linebacker in the second, or they could take one in the first. They could take a safety in the second, or they could take one in the first. They could take edge. I mean, if you're saying he could go in the second, I think you have to say he could go in the first.
Well, I don't think one of those three guys in the first. I think
somebody else.
Maybe a Sutton, right?
Yeah, DJ Moore from Maryland.
Right.
If he falls.
Right. With possibly Moore. Now, the thing about Moore, he's a Power Five guy, right? A guy like Sutton's not,
Right. Calvin Ridley, it sounded like he might drop a little bit after testing, a little poorly on the athletic chart. Alabama guy for you.
Right. So, I suppose if they went wide receiver, I could see it being Ridley or Moore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Should there be more talk about either one of those guys possibly being the guy?
How much
do you think back to what Kevin Colbert said about the inside linebacker class not being impactful?
It's a weird statement. I can't make heads or tails of it, Dave. I think it's a good class. I think there's a lot of options at pick 60. You know, I think if you don't take a safety in the first round, you know, that, I think that's the bigger question about the weakness of this draft and what safeties can you take mid-round that are going to fit well. I think that's a bigger question than trying to find an inside linebacker.
Now, that's where I'm going next with this Gil Brandt thing. Ronnie Harrison, he has ranked 48th overall, okay? Right, but one spot behind him, he has Justin Reed out of Stanford, okay, at 49 overall. Now, when you get into I think any player in Gil Brandt's top 50 is open for discussion of possibly being a first-round selection, looking at Brandt's history, okay? Now, when you get outside of that, though, I think, and I'm sure you can find instances. I mean, he has Jesse Bates at 52nd overall. I guess where I'm getting at, and I've kind of been this way with these safeties for a while now. I look at Reed and I look at Bates and I think they're second round guys.
Yeah, I mean, I had Bates in my last mock draft in the first, and you know, people made good points that is he really worth a first round pick? You know, I was just trying to mix it up and throw different names in there to see how the draft would kind of unfold. I think Reed's a first rounder. I'm confident in that. I think he will go in the first, but Bates, I can understand, you know, saying if he gets there at 60, great. If not, then you know, you're not going to take him at 28.
And as much as I like Reed and Bates, I don't know if I'm doing laps around the house if either one of those guys are the first round pick. I mean, I really am struggling here, Alex, with finding a guy at 28 overall that I get excited about being a Steeler, you know, a first round pick.
Well, you got to do a mock. You got to pick somebody.
Now, look. When you look at and let's roll quickly through the pro days that Colbert attended this year: Alabama, Oklahoma State, Louisville, Wake Forest, Georgia, Penn State. What am I missing here?
Did you say LSU? Was he at LSU?
LSU. That's seven.
I think there's one more.
There's one more in there. I'm missing.
Ohio, you say Ohio State?
Okay, Ohio State. That's eight. Am I still missing one?
No, I think it was at eight.
Was it eight or nine?
I can pull up the post you did, but I don't know. I'm just spitballing. I think it was eight.
Let's see here. I got it right here. Alabama. I mean, who are the first round prospects there? It's Fitzpatrick, Ridley, Evans, Payne, and maybe Harrison, right?
Yep.
And nobody other than that.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Wake Forest, there's only one option there, and that's Jesse Bates, right?
Yep.
Oh, Virginia Tech. We forgot Virginia Tech.
Oh, okay.
Both the Edmonds boys, but Trebane is really the only first-round prospect there.
Yep.
Oklahoma State, I mean, I suppose we could go Rudolph and Washington, right?
Yeah, I think Washington's going to be 60, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay, Penn State, Barkley, and maybe Mike Gesicki, but that's it, right?
Yeah, and Barkley's obviously going to be gone.
Right, Barkley's going to be gone. Georgia, we have Roquan Smith, Isaiah Wynn, Lorenzo Carter, and maybe you could put Sony Michel in there.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State. I mean, you want to put Hubbard in there. I don't, but it's Denzel. Okay. It's Denzel Ward, in my opinion, and that's it.
Mm, unless you talk about someone like a Billy Price, he's probably going to be around two guy, but he's a center and not going to be in Pittsburgh's plans.
All right, Louisville, we have Lamar Jackson and Jair Alexander, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then LSU, I mean, it's Geis, Dante Jackson, and Arden Key.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be on the radar. And, you know, I think Geis is going to be the guy they take an LSU kid.
All right, out of all those guys I just named there, and obviously you can't have Barkley. And obviously you're probably going to toss the tight ends and the offensive linemen to the side. You're probably going to toss the running backs to the side. Who do you get excited about?
I think it's Rashawn Evans. I think that's the guy that hits most everything.
I think him and Bates are the two guys, you know, not, you know, Rudolph is another guy that, I know you're against it, but what do you think about going back and revisiting the Bill Parcells seven things that he looks for in a quarterback?
Yeah, I don't know. Has someone done that already? Someone checked it out?
Yeah, it's done pretty much every year, and it's done this year, and Mason Rudolph is the only one that checks all seven boxes.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
You know, and now you know, read into that what you will. You go back to Joshua Dobbs. Last year, he checked five of the seven boxes, I think.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
You know, so it's one of those things with people are tired of talking about me, but you can bet your sweet bottom dollar that if somehow – I got to be honest with you. I think Bill Belichick might be interested in Rudolph in that first pick that they just acquired from the Rams. Mm-hmm. I think maybe there's a chance that Bill Belichick goes there. But I, you know, look, a lot of people don't want me talking about a quarterback in the first round. I understand why. So, but those other names, I guess what I'm getting at, Alex, is I can't find myself right now excited about one of these guys.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, you could open the possibility of a Darius Geis, because if you say the guys that fill the immediate needs and the bigger needs, the talent's not quite there. We don't love these guys. Let's just take the best player available and our highest graded guy. And I feel pretty confident that's going to be Darius Geis if he slips.
All right. The Steelers have announced their draft visitors for today. Matthew Thomas out of Florida State, Marcus Allen, out of Penn State, Tarvarius Moore, another safety, out of Southern Miss. Now, one name that's not on this list is Justin Reed, and he posted on Instagram that he's in Pittsburgh. So
today he's in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean within the last couple of hours. So, you know, why isn't he on this list?
Who knows what games they're playing. So, yeah, Thomas tested extremely well at the combine. I don't think the production match, but I forget his numbers exactly, but it was like a 41.5-inch vert. I mean, he had a really underrated workout, but a really strong workout. Marcus Allen, you know, I think he's a good tackler. I think he's an all-around, you know, good player, not a lot of huge flaws in the game, but I just don't see the impact player of one career interception. Tarvarius Moore has gained a lot of steam late in this draft process. You're seeing a second to third round pick, a combine, you know, snub, I guess you could call it, that has good tape from other guys that have watched him more than I have. I've only watched, you know, Twitter highlights rather than me diving into the tape myself. So, and then you have Justin Reed. So we're getting some safeties in now, which is good to see.
All right, Matthew Thomas, 6 foot two, three quarters, 232 out of Miami, hailed from Miami, Florida, out of Florida State. He did not play in 2015 due to academic reasons, but in 2016 and 2017, he totaled combined 192 tackles. He had four sacks at the combine. 4.58 40-yard dash. He bettered that to 4.44 reportedly at his pro day. Put up a vertical jump, I think 41.5 and 10-foot, 11-inch broad jump. Jumped out of the building, a nice short shuttle time of 4.28 seconds and a three-cone time at 6.85 seconds. So he's definitely, I think he's what? He's like a sixth or seventh round guy with him. And you look at the guys, the safeties and Allen and Moore. I know Allen's kind of a mid round guy, right? And the Steelers were at the Penn State Pro Day. I think there's some like there. I think there's enough there that if they do not go safety, you know, first couple rounds, I think Marcus Allen could be on their radar maybe as a round three guy.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Allen, just because, again, I want to see some splash from this defense, and I don't think Allen's going to provide that, but, you know, I can understand wanting the extra look. I think Matthew Thomas is going to be an inside guy. I'm looking at his stats, four career sacks, so an inside guy. I think that's going to make 8 or 9 inside linebackers they've brought in. 3 safeties now. 24 out of the 30 reported have come in.
And what have you done any work on Tarvarius Moore out of Southern
Miss? No, like I said, I know he's gained some steam in the media circles the last probably 2 weeks as a guy that could be a second, third round guy, probably more third. But has some good tape apparently for a guy that's fairly unknown, and I haven't watched him myself outside of the people posting some highlights and some clips. But a physical guy that I think has some range and some ball skills.
All right, I'm trying to think what else here on this that stuck out to me on this Gil Brandt ranking. Oh, Dante Pettis is another wide receiver out of Washington that I think could be on the Steelers' radar too. He has Sam Hubbard as 63rd overall. Talking about Gil Brandt, and I'm trying to think in WASU, I think he has James Washington 75 overall, Arden Key 78 overall, our buddy Ogbonya out of Oklahoma, he has 81st overall. I don't see Nwosu in his top 100. He does have Darius Leonard at number 100 overall. Talking about Tarvarius Moore, he has him 98 overall. Interesting. A guy that I've got to watch some tape on there. Shaquin Griffin, he has 92nd overall. There as well. So, you know, that for those of you listening, go check it out. And I'm probably going to be posting a little bit about this either today or tomorrow about Gil Brandt's top 150 and all as well. I always find it intriguing because he's normally, I think to this date, he has a good kind of grasp, if you will, on where these guys ultimately land at there. Anything else? Run through your mock draft for us real quick.
People can go. We'll link it and check it out. I wanted to mention just the other guys that have come in. What, Bilal Nichols from Delaware yesterday? Greg Gilmore, the LSU defensive end, a couple defensive linemen there. Has anyone else come in since we've last talked, Dave? I mean, Darius Leonard, did we mention him coming in?
I'm not sure if we hit that on the Friday show or not, but they brought him in on Saturday, evidently, I think. He was in. It's never been reported that he visited, though, right?
Yeah. But he was in Pittsburgh. I don't think it was to get Primanti Brothers. So.
Right. And now I suppose these could be workouts, right? I mean, what's the rule on the workout? Do they have to go to them?
I think they have to go to them for a workout. If you come here, I think that's considered a pre-draft visit.
Right. Now, it makes you wonder why they're not listing him as a pre-draft visit. I mean, in fact, our buddy Young Daniel just posted, this is interesting, Daniel who writes for us, Valente, according to, and I posted this earlier in the day, Justin Reed had posted on his Instagram account that he's in Pittsburgh, and now he has a picture on his Instagram account looking at the Steelers facility.
I think that's a pre-draft visit. I don't know why some of these guys don't get. Maybe they'll get reported later, but that's a visit.
I mean, why aren't the Steelers? You know, Bob Labriola, he's a reporter. He, you know, I guess he's going by the list that they hand him. I would think. You know, why isn't this a reported visit? Should we put our tinfoil hats on here?
I mean, I don't know what conspiracy theory are you going to drum up for this. I don't know. He's in for a visit. That's all I care about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I wrote this on Twitter last week. I don't know where you come in on this, but do you see the reason to play smokescreen games with any draft prospects at any point?
Maybe if you're trying to be a top five team and you're trying to trade back or get some drum up some interest there, I get. But honestly, the Steelers don't do a lot of smokescreen stuff. I mean, we have these rules, and no, they're not 100% guarantees, but they're pretty consistent throughout the years. You know, who they go to a pro day, who they dine with at a pro day, and who they bring in for a visit. I mean, there's pretty consistent history there. So I don't think the Steelers play a whole lot of games. I think this is just weird stuff that falls through the cracks and doesn't get reported like it should.
I think if you're a general manager and you're making a decision based on what one other team you think is doing, you should be fired. Now look, why do teams trade up to get certain players? Well, they obviously think that A, they like that player a lot, and B, in whatever mocks or whatever, you know, they don't believe the player will fall to them at a certain spot. So they deem it worthwhile to go up. They're not doing it because they think the Patriots are going to draft the player there.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Yeah, no, I think you're correct.
It bugs me when you look at the Steelers and you know, them going to the pro days of Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph. People say, oh, that's just a smoke screen. No, I don't view that at all. Okay, anything else? Run through your mock draft real quick.
All right, well, I should have pulled it up. Jesse Bates in the first, though. You know, I probably won't have him there in my final edition. I wanted to go in a different direction with that. And Bates does check basically every box in terms of the rules. Second round, Malik Jefferson from Texas. I think they're going to like him a lot. Brought in for pre-draft visit. High athlete guy. Upside underclassman, yada yada. Third round, kind of a new name, but Deshaun Hamilton from Penn State. Excellent route runner. Can play slot, can play outside, maybe could do some return work. Hands are an issue, but I think that, you know, Darryl Drake's going to be able to coach that up. Round five, Kalen Ballage from Arizona State, James Saxon as pro day. The bigger back, the bell type, who can, you know, run, maybe not as physical as you would like, but can catch and kind of be a do-it-all guy. Then round five, Oren Burks from Vanderbilt. I got a train coming, so I'm going to wrap this up. Joshua Frazier in round seven, and then Russell Gage brought in for a visit with the final pick.
All right, with that, we will be back on Friday, either myself or David Todd, and David Todd or Alex Kazora. So in the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kazora at Alex_Kazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.